We've got open lines for you now. I'm going to open up a special hotline for you as well. The Saved by Something hotline, whatever it was, what saved you? What could it have been? Your instincts, your gut, what was it? Some person, an angel? That's 818-817-0021, 818-817-0021. By the way, everybody who sent in emails for their friends, loved ones to get on the prayer list, you're on the list this week. You know, the only thing I ask when you send me an email, need the name and the reason, the ailment, whatever it might be. Zuri sent me one earlier this week and said, George, please put Lola on the prayer list. And I said, of course, emailed him back. And I said, what is the affliction? What's wrong with Lola? And so I finally got one back. So even Lola is on the list. Said, George, Lola is one of my hens. She cannot walk on her legs, but can only move around using her little elbows on the ground. The vet could not identify the cause without the pricey blood work. Lola is getting antibiotics and other meds daily, but if she's not better at the end of 10 days, she will be euthanized. She's a beautiful, sweet little animal. Thank you. So Lola's on the list, Zuri. Let's hope everything works out there. And we'll be back with your open line calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to the open line portion of Coast to Coast AM. And let us go right to the phones and get things going. We'll pick it up with Joshua, first of all, in Ripley, West Virginia. First time caller for Joshua. Hi, Josh.
Hello.
How are you, George? Good. All is well. Thanks.
I'm quite well, as a matter of fact. I've been trying to get through for quite a while. I appreciate your time.
Sure.
I was really just wanting to share an experience I had as a child. Of course, I've had many, but this is the one that anytime I tell it, I get the chills.
All right, share it.
And it was back when I was about 4 years old. I remember I was at my house and I had a babysitter, and she asked me to go in the kitchen and get some gum. So I did, and of course, when I got into the kitchen, there was this black entity. I don't even really know how to describe it, but it was somewhat spherical and had either what would be mistaken for ears or horns or something. But I just remember that it was in front of me, about 5 feet ahead, and it kind of moved back and forth a little, but that was about all I remember.
Was it devil-looking, you think?
Well, that's the thing, George. It didn't have a lot of features. It was just blackness. But the only distinctive features it had was, well, anatomically, was either the ears or horns.
The horns, yeah.
Well, the thing is, over the time I'd lived there, we'd had several different things, you know, cabinet slamming, things of that nature, and of course we always felt uneasy there. And I was just wanting to ask you, is it of your opinion, do you think that the people, negative people, can draw things to a household?
Oh yeah. Oh, there's no question about it. No question about it. You mean negative people in that house that lived there?
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's no doubt that negativity draws more negativity, and that means evil, I think. Regardless of how many good people there might have been in the house. Why? Did you suspect somebody in the household?
Well, yes, of course. Yeah. My father, he was always very negative. And, of course, at the time, you know, being so young, you don't realize something like that. But then looking back on it retrospectively, it's like, wow, you know, a lot of these things happen there. And then, of course, every house we lived in, these types of things used to follow. And I don't want to sound really out there, but earlier had that lady. She was talking about the black dog. Excuse me.
Where are you?
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm at my house.
Okay. I thought somebody attacked you for a moment.
No, I accidentally knocked something over. Anyway, the black dog actually... I saw that once as well, but I kind of shrugged it off, thinking it wasn't anything of any importance. But it actually spoke to me. at one point.
What did it say?
Well, at first it seemed real threatening. Well, of course, black dog and all. But it kind of made me feel a little bit comfortable at one point.
It was trying to trick
when
you.
When it spoke to me, it said, don't worry, now is not the time. And I really didn't know how to take that. But, of course, then I hurried home because it was just kind of, I don't know, man, it was just kind of be out there a little bit. Of course, this was when I was young, you know, no drugs.
So did that negativity finally go away after, let's say, your father moved or whatever happened?
After I moved.
You moved. You got out of there.
Never. And I don't know if maybe the gift or sensitivity has just waned with age or perhaps just getting away from that.
Yeah, I think getting away from that, Joshua, that's probably what did the trick. Adalia in Spring, Texas, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. I'm also going to call about the ghost.
Yeah.
I've gone over, you know, it's been years, but I went to my brother's house, and I was driving my car, and when I got to the house, you know, I went in for a little bit, came back out, and when I got in my car, I heard like a whoosh, you know, right behind me.
Okay.
And I got chills everywhere, and my sister-in-law was right there, and she...
Yeah, who wouldn't?
Yeah, I was like, oh, my God, what is that? And we started praying, and then I started to leave, and it felt like somebody was hitting me from behind, like in the car.
Like slapping you around?
No, actually hitting the car. Like it would.
Oh, bumping it. Yeah,
bumping it really hard. And I thought it was my brakes or something, and it did it. And then when I'd returned to the house, I didn't hear anything.
They were after you.
Yes. And, you know, I kept praying, and it was just scary.
I got to tell you, I mean, these things are real. They happen. They happen to a lot of people. Jamie's on the Skype line in Detroit, the old hometown. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, George.
Yeah.
I just had two really quick stories that I wanted to share with you.
Give me your best one first. Go ahead.
Okay. It's a Ouija board story. My aunt had passed away a couple of years ago, and I just kind of... didn't really think anything of it. I mean, I knew how she died. I didn't have a lot of the details on how she died. The only thing I knew was she was struck by a car.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Well, so me and a friend from work got together, and this friend had no idea of that my aunt passed away or anything like that. And so we did this Ouija board, and about halfway through the night, my aunt came up and was talking to me and told me how she died and what had happened and everything. And, you know, at the time I was like, oh, yeah, I'm sure it's just, you know, probably, you know, all wrong. It could all be wrong. And I'm getting myself worked up for no reason. Well, later after I had left my friends, and my friend from work was just a random friend, you know, she didn't know anything about it or anything like that. So she definitely wasn't moving the board. I had called my grandmother, who knew more information on how she died. And pretty much everything that the Ouija board had told me was really spot on correct.
So it wasn't evil for you?
No, it wasn't. Me and my friend had used it for quite a few hours, and talked to a lot of different people, and I hadn't asked for my aunt. She just came up and started talking.
Well, I got to tell you, got to stay away from those Ouija boards, Jamie. I mean, those things are dangerous. By the way, in Los Angeles, we have lots of crosswalks here, and these things are so programmed. I mean, they have seconds. They tell you how long you have to walk across so a car doesn't hit you. And, you know, then they change and everything else. Well, I came inches away from running over a little old lady today who, you know, the sign was up. It was do not go for them. Do not go. And so I'm coming down the road there, and she decides to go out in the middle of the intersection, walking across the crosswalk where she's not even supposed to be. And she just popped out as I was getting close to her. And I just came inches away from hitting that little old lady. And she gave me the dirtiest look I have ever seen in my life. And she just kept walking. Cars were zooming by her, honking and everything, but she was like oblivious to it. Got to be careful out there. Let's go to the Saved by Something hotline. There you go, Susan in Springfield, Missouri. Hi, Susan.
Hi, George. Great to talk to you.
You too. So you got saved, huh?
I did. It was a miracle.
What happened?
I was driving north to Minnesota from Missouri to visit my sister. I was a single mother mm-hmm. with two little kids at home. And I was driving a minivan at nighttime, and I went to pass another truck, and a big old deer jumped in front of the truck.
Oh.
And I was praying, oh, please, please, I need to get home to my kids, and I don't want to die now.
They say don't swerve, just hit it.
And what happened was the van literally was picked up and turned around in the other direction, and I didn't hit anything.
How in the heck did that happen?
Well, I stopped, and I was facing the opposite direction, and another car drove up out of the darkness. It was total pitch black, and this car came up out of nowhere. And inside were these two older people wearing clothes from, like, the 1960s. The lady had gloves on and an old hat, and it was like a 1960s car, and they were, like, glowing in the dark, and they just stopped to ask how I was doing. And I said, oh, my gosh, I was all shook up and everything. And I said, well, I guess I'm okay, but nothing was touched on the car or me, but the other truck got hit by the deer, and I'm here to talk about it.
You got saved. What do you think saved you? What do you think it was?
I think it was guardian angels.
Angels,
I think the people that stopped by to see how I were my guardian angels.
There they were. Yep, wanted to check up on you.
I looked up again, and they were gone.
They did their job.
They certainly did.
They earned their wings.
They're grown, and they certainly did.
All right, thanks. That's a great story, Susan. They earned their wings. We'll go to Al in Arcadia, California. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Al, welcome to the show.
Hello, George. How are you, sir?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I guess you heard on the news yesterday that the final closure came on the Chandra Levy case.
Yes, 60 years for that guy.
Yes, and as I mentioned to you in the past, I've been a remote viewer. I was one of the people chosen in the combined group that investigated that case.
And?
And it came pretty close to what the analysis came out to be.
Interesting. Now, did they use what you guys did?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
At first, they didn't. They kind of
was a bunch of mumbo jumbo, didn't they?
Yeah, because there were other people who were coming in with other, so-called psychical, predictions and stuff. And we were sort of like put to the back burner. But then when they did go back to the site and found the remains, then they re-looked and then they checked our analysis and they re-back to what we said originally.
How does a guy get 60 years for a brutal murder? Why doesn't he get life?
I don't know how. I think it may be because of the complications of the way this case went, that some things were probably not absolute that they could give him first degree.
Tell me a little bit more about your remote viewing now. Do you do this on a regular basis?
As needed and as called for.
Primarily for law enforcement, or do you do it for, like, yourself and friends?
Oh, no, I've done it for law enforcement as a consultant.
Yeah.
And also mostly for research purposes. And I do lecture about it.
Have you written anything?
There's been stuff on the Internet, about me and some of the cases I've been involved in.
Send me some more stuff. I'd like to read up more on you.
Oh, you can look up in Facebook. There are numerous sites, where you just Google my name. Edward Mock, and things will come up. And pretty much a lot of this started when I was had my near-death experience when I was 6 years old.
6 years old.
Yeah.
And did you even know what it was when you were doing it at that age?
No. No, at the time, I just thought it was just a normal kid thing until somebody pointed it out. That.
Have you ever remote viewed the future?
There have been times. Well, what's interesting is you can remote both the past, present, and future. And there were times when I did go into what appeared to be the future.
How far do you think you went?
Oh, gosh. I really don't know. I could only pretty much say maybe, logically, maybe about 50 years.
So we're still around then?
Yeah, apparently. I guess so.
That's a good thing. Okay, Al, thanks. Let's go next to Jason in Hawaii on the wild card line. Hey, Jason, welcome.
Oh, hey, George. How's it going?
Good.
I just had a quick, I was listening to last night's guest, Winter Locke, and he was talking about Lucifer. I just had a little theory about that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think, you know, Lucifer was God's most beautiful angel, and I think he, or, you know, in the Old Testament, and they say how winners always write history. I think Lucifer, you know, he got some angels together, and he said, look, God's going around blowing up Sodom and Gomorrah, killing people left and right. And he went up to God with the other angels, and God's like, oh, I can't have this rebellion in heaven. So he put him in heaven jail. And then he thought to himself, he's like, well, you know, maybe Lucifer's right. I can't just go around nuking cities on earth and stuff. And so God got together with his PR guys, and they're like, well, why don't you just cast Lucifer out of heaven and all of his other angels?
Yeah, get rid of the troublemakers, right?
Just write a book called The Bible and blame everything on him.
Well, let me tell you, you never know. I don't think it happened like that, but you never know. But I also don't think that God, let's put God in quotations, does these horrible things. I mean, I don't think, see, you know, the book of Genesis had God as destroying mankind, killing people, doing all these horrendous things. I don't think God does that. I think those were other forces in action. I don't think it was God by any means. Let's go to James in Montana, west of the Rockies. Let's get you in here, James. Go ahead.
How you doing, George?
Good.
God bless you. Actually, I was on August 24th and my cell phone died. I'd like help with this, if you could, remote viewing this anyway, any of the people out there. My wife and I were married, and we went down to Colorado. Her dad was dying for our honeymoon. Long story short, that opening day of hunting season, we were on a spirit hunt, we called it, and we had a large whitetail buck chased into our campfire, literally. I got dirt almost kicked on me. Chasing the deer through the woods, it got away from me, and I thought it was running up the riverbank, and it ended up getting in the river. I was running, and I transgressed that line from where it was at our fire to where it was swimming due away east in the river. I then, in front of my witness, ex-wife, who is a paralegal, turned and leaped and cleared the 60-foot trees along the riverbank.
No way. You did?
Yes, sir. This will be remote viewed, and everything that I say will be proven true. I'm a Christian. I'm a believer in one God, and I cannot lie. And this is, I call it the leap of faith, cradled in the hand of God. As I went over the top, out of sight, George, the witness on the ground, my wife, newlywed, watched me start to tuck my body up in a seated position and bring my gun around. If you would have been standing where I landed, I landed in a completed, seated position like you would see in the Olympics, the pads of your feet. My butt, my elbows were coming down, and all I said, because I watched that deer the whole way I fell out of the sky, if I can hit him, I can get him. And the crosshairs...
Did you get him?
And the crosshairs came down right on the back of his skull.
And you got him. We'll be back. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, Ian Punnett has a potpourri of guests for you. Three separate guests coming in with various topics throughout the night, including Scientology. On our Sunday program, Rob Simone joins us with Dr. Len Horowitz talking about harmonic sounds and how they change your life. And then for the rest of the week, Nick Redfern joins me on Monday night as we talk about the NASA conspiracy. On Tuesday's program, Damon Vickers believes that the New World Order should happen. I haven't heard a lot of people say that. He's one of them. On Wednesday, dual program for you, Stan Deo on preparing for the inevitable, and James McCanney on the pole shifts, followed Thursday with Hugh Newman as we talk about the earth grids and what's happening there with the pyramids of Giza and some other incredible stories. And then back to open lines on Coast to Coast AM. And here we go, back to the phone calls, open lines here, fast night. Let's go to Casey in Lone Rock, Wisconsin on the saved line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hey, Casey, go ahead.
Hey, George, you're awesome.
Yeah.
I was calling you. It was about when I was about 15, 16 years old. I was at a, you know, Christian Bible camp, and we were doing this upward adventure thing. And, of course, a friend of mine and I had to sneak off and have a couple cigarettes. And so we walked down the trail at night, and we went quite a ways down the trail. And on the way back, we were, you know, just kind of running back, and he was behind me somewhere. And the trail split, you know, either to the right or to the left, and I took the wrong direction.
Like a Robert Frost poem.
Yeah, pretty much. But I went to the left when I should have gone right, and running along in the darkness, you know, didn't have my flashlight out. It was in my back pocket. And just all of a sudden heard this voice just in my head just say, stop.
Oh.
So I stopped. And got my flashlight out and shined it ahead of myself, and there was a drop-off that was about 600 or 700 feet.
Oh, my God. You were right at the edge?
I was literally within 3 feet of the edge.
Oh, my God.
And I fell backwards, and I just kind of cradled the ground like I had never done before, and that's my story.
What a horrible feeling that would have been had you just kept running right off it, not even seeing it.
Oh, yeah.
And then
and
down you go.
Below.
Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Just rocky, you know, boulders and just
what is that mechanism, Casey, in our system that does that?
I don't know, but I really seem to I've always had that. I mean, you know, that whatever it is, you know, my mother and I both kind of share that ability, you know.
Is it us or is it the help? I think it's the help.
Oh, I definitely think it's the help.
Yeah.
Because if I didn't have help, I don't know what good I would be.
Exactly. Boy, that's a great story. I'm glad you're here to tell us it.
Oh, yeah, me too.
All right, Teresa in Manhattan, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, good morning, Teresa.
Well, good morning to you, George. How are you?
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I have a story. I once did some inadvertent remote viewing without really trying.
All right, what happened?
Well, back when I was in college, art school, somebody was getting $10 to get your opinion on a logo. That's all I knew about it. So I went there, and the guy showed me, basically, it was just an oval with a couple of letters inside of it, you know, really bare bones. And I just immediately, I got this vivid picture of a whole bunch of white semi-trucks, just really clean white semi-trucks, like a whole hundreds of them, row of them with this logo on it.
A caravan of them.
Yeah, exactly. And I knew, I kept saying, they manufacture something, but it's really clean. It's not like a dirty urban that it was just like a green, leafy corporate headquarters.
Yeah.
There's hundreds of these trucks, and they just manufactured a huge amount of something really, really clean. And I'm saying this, so the guy interrupts me, and he's really mad. He goes, look, obviously somebody told you what's going on. I'm going to give you the money anyway, but please, you know, I got to still interview some other people, so don't tell anybody, and, you know,
we'll
just forget this happened. So I was convincing him. I said, please, I don't know what's going on. You know, I'm just a little psychic. Please, please tell me. And he's like, no, no, come on. You're wasting my time. So finally, he tells me that it was a company that manufactured computer microchips. So that was exactly what I was getting, you know, the clean, clean situation.
Sure. Very antiseptic.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a great story.
So if he's listening, I really did not know.
The power of the mind, huh?
Yeah.
I love it. Thanks, Teresa. We get a lot of text questions. Tommy's back in the studio with one of them right now. What do you have for us, Tom?
Oh, George, you like animals, right?
I love animals.
Okay, well, Randy in Washington, D.C., he texts in, and he says, George, my cat seems to know things. Do you believe that animals can think?
I think animals can think. I think they're intuitive. They have extrasensory powers, probably a little more tuned in than most human beings. There's no doubt about it.
I tend to agree with you, and it got me thinking, you know, you always hear animal stories helping humans. Well, a few years back, I don't know if you heard the story, George, a German shepherd saved his owner. He called 911.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Remember
story.
That one?
Animals are fantastic.
They can think.
Yep. Matter of fact, I told you, Tom, a long time ago, one of my dates, many, many years ago, I was with a lady who at dinner said, I hate dogs. And I went, excuse me? She said, I hate dogs. They're smelly. I just don't like them. And I, you know what? I don't like animals. And I left. I wasn't going to go out with somebody like that. You don't have to own an animal. You don't have to. If you can't take care of it, then don't own it. But not like it? Nah, that tells me everything I need to know. Let's go to Jaeger in Pear Ridge, Arkansas, on the wild card line. Hey, Jaeger, welcome. Go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good. You would have left, too. If she said, I don't like animals, would you have left the dinner? She was cute.
Yes, I would.
She was pretty cute.
George, I'm a furry. I would have left the dinner right away.
Good for you.
Well, what I've got for you is, since I've last talked to you several months ago, I've been doing some archaeological exploration outside of Eureka Springs, Arkansas. And we found in a cave several large skeletons. And when I say large, I'm talking humongous.
Of what?
Complete skeleton.
Animal? Human?
Well, that's the interesting part, because they look human. But the genetic test that a friend of mine who still wants to remain nameless because of the flap, which I'll get to in a second, at the U of A said they have some genetic trait that looks human, but they're not. He's never seen it really before. And the other ones that we found were about 7 feet tall. This is tape measure on the complete skull.
Right.
But the skulls were vulpine and lupine in the way they looked. And for those that don't know, that would be canine and fox.
Upright or on fours?
Upright.
All right.
Upright. Two legs. The hands, though, had 3 fingers and a thumb, which we couldn't figure out. And the genetic background on those, they fit no genetic profile of anything on Earth.
Now, the other ones, how big were they? Were they bigger than the 7-footers?
The average size for the humanoid was about 14 feet.
14 feet.
The biggest one we found was 20 foot, and the smallest was about 7. And we were going to go public with this until I got a visit from one of my former commanding officers, and they took everything from us.
They took everything?
They took everything. They went to the caves. They got everything out.
What about photographs?
They took my camera. They took my dang hard drive that I had and the computer that had the pictures. They took everything.
Did they give you a reason?
They said, this is information that we do not want being publicized in this state, in this time. There's things that just you'll cause problems for us. We don't want you talking about it. And the biggest one, it was not so much the giant humanoids that they were so upset about, was these anthro-like things that we found.
They were more concerned about those.
Yes, they were. And what's amazing is what got us to the point where we found these was a story from an old Native American gentleman that lives up there, Ozark tribe. And this is in the Boston Mountains. This is the highest part of the Ozarks. And they talk about a group they called the Watchers. And he said, these bones that you have found, they are bones of the Watchers. And the thing, though, that really freaked me out was the fact they're not fossilized. And according to date of death, about 300 years ago was date of death.
Now, how were they scattered around?
They looked like they were laid in there as a funeral. They were not scattered.
Okay. All of them?
All of them.
Okay, so it's not like they died there. They were brought there.
They were brought there, and they were laid to rest, and us poking in caves looking for Confederate gold found them.
These Watchers, extraterrestrial? What do you think? What's your theory?
I'm drawn to the thought, you've heard the stories of the Anunnaki and Nephilim.
Absolutely.
I'm thinking something along that lines. I'm thinking it is something that was bred with humans and was left here to watch us and to guide us. But the stories I got about, there are other stories from Osage Indians about the anthro-looking creatures, and they called them dogs of war, literally. That was the literal translation. They were warriors, and they were mean, but they were also big, but they spoke our languages or languages of the people there.
So they were intelligent.
Highly intelligent. And there were stories of them breeding, having offspring with humans.
That's bizarre. What do you think the relationship was with those creatures and the 14-foot humanoids?
I'm thinking that maybe they lived together, worked together. I don't know. They might have been studying each other.
Maybe they worked for the humanoids. You know, maybe they were the workers.
Maybe the other way around.
Maybe the other way around, too.
The brain capacity on our anthros was humongous. It was twice the size of our other skulls.
Wow.
I'm still, I'm a little shaky about this.
Would you ever go back there, or has it been cordoned off? What's the situation?
It's been cordoned off, but we snuck back in there several other times because, George, I'm going to be honest, I fight KKK up here. I'm not afraid of anything. I'm not afraid of being shot at. I'm not afraid of being arrested. And we've gone back, and I plan to go back, and I plan to keep digging because that cave goes a lot deeper. That was just the first chamber that we went into, the big chamber, and that was probably 105 feet down.
I've got to assume that if everything was confiscated, they've gone all the way through this cave.
Maybe. But there are so many caves, George, in that area around Eureka Springs that are interconnected. It's impossible to get everything.
God, I wish you would have had some pictures for us.
That's what I'm going to try to get next.
All right.
And I'm going to try. And, George, I got one last thing here I wanted to say. Who is your guy that does your call screening?
That's Tommy.
I want to thank him. He does a great job, and it's a thankless job.
Well, we reward him well.
Yeah, but the listeners never thank him, George. And that's something I feel I've talked to the guy a lot of times. I wanted to thank him for always being polite.
Actually, he's saying thank you in my ear right now for you. Here you go.
Yeah.
Thank you. You keep in touch.
One last thing, George.
Yes,
I got to say this. You've got a heck of a fan base. The Furs on Furry for Life are all listening to you tonight, and we're here talking about
you.
All
right. Now, let me tell you, that's a great story. You get some pictures for me. If you go back to that cave, be safe. That is absolutely incredible. Truly incredible. Let's go next to Dale in Tallahassee, Florida, east of the Rockies. Hey, Dale, welcome to the program.
How you doing, George?
Okay, yeah, that's a great story, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'd like to speak on Lucifer.
All right.
Again, I'm a person like to bring, I guess, the knowledge that I have been led to. And really, when you break down the word Lucifer, you get L-U, Lu, which is short for luminous. And cipher is sphere or your human biosphere or the human being. And the Lucifer mean a being of light. And all of the Elohim, the deities, were able to illuminate themselves, as so was Emmanuel called Jesus when he took Peter, James, and John to the mount.
They were all light beings.
Right, they were all light beings, Luciferians. So again, the scripture doesn't mention what Lucifer and, I guess, and Isaiah that is spoken of.
But why did he go bad?
Well, again...
Or did he?
To be honest with you, the information that I have been led to, he said that he weakens the nation. And the scripture said that the mighty Lord that led them, he weakened the nation so they can conquer the different Canaanite nations.
Well, that's interesting, but are you convinced though that Lucifer was evil?
Well, again, Lucifer is which Luciferian being of light are you talking about?
Yeah, there could be many, right?
But there are many. There were many deities. The Bible and Job mentions the morning stars. They sung together. So those morning stars, those multitudes of beings, were all Luciferians.
Interesting. You know your studies.
Well, thank you much, George.
You have done your job. Let's go next to Charles in Los Angeles, west of the Rockies. Charles, go ahead.
Blessing to you, George. George, the gentleman that was just on, he does not know what he's talking about. Lucifer is a dark entity. The reason why I'm calling is I wanted to make statements about Winter Lake that was on the Satanists. He completely and totally lied to your 20 million listeners. He said that Jesus Christ wasn't real. He said that aliens could not make contact with the Earth because the distance was too far. He also said hell didn't exist. I am here to tell you, I had a visitation from Jesus Christ in 1990. He is real.
Of course he's real.
And judgment is coming to this planet because he showed me judgment. Number two is that I've had contact in my life since I was a child with ETs, and I put that information on the internet. Three is that when Jesus Christ gave me this this blessed visitation in 1990, I was taken to hell. I saw it. I saw the fallen angels. And you know what? The gentleman that had called and had spoken about these creatures that he found in the cave,
yeah.
I saw millions of entities that favored those. They were 20, 25, 35 feet tall, pure ebony color. The masculine entities were perfectly shaped like the females, and they were, I was told, they were fallen angels. And I want to say something. You did an extremely well job that night in handling that particular demon, and there were so many demons that called that night, yet you were very professional, you stood strong, and you boldly spoke about the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. And I'm here to tell you that Jesus Christ told me, he said three times, he said, Suleiman, do not be unprepared when I come. And George, he is moments away of coming because the visitation that the people had in Jerusalem, that blue UFO and that light that was seen over Jerusalem.
Incredible video. We're at the top of the hour already, Charles, but let me tell you, that video, some people say it's a hoax, that Jerusalem video of a UFO, but I've got to tell you, taken from three different angles, all synced up, something very, very strange there. Those of you who didn't see it, we have it posted at coasttocoastam.com. Look for it in the past archives. And this thing just hovers over the dome and then just takes off. Another hour of open lines on Coast to Coast AM.